So what is it about Israel that impacts people so much?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is Michael Brown, and boy, is my heart overflowing as I speak to you here from Seoul, Korea. Just some amazing meetings I've been in with, I don't know, close to 1,000 young people from about 30 different nations. So much hunger, so much thirst, so much desire for God. When I spoke yesterday and gave the call for complete surrender to the purpose of God, you live to do His will. I mean, they just came flooding up and just were pouring their hearts out to God. And today when I talked about just standing strong and not compromising, not bowing down, and they're just so fervently committed. And then at the end, they were called up to pray for me. When I ended, I said, hey, pray for me if you think of it. We're on the front lines. And the leader, Jerome, leading the conference, asked if they would come up and surround me. So I got on my knees and was swarmed by these kids praying, crying out to God. So thank you for praying as you are in the States and elsewhere. Delighted to be speaking with you today. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So in a moment, I'm going to bring on with me Scott Volk. Now, Scott's not here in Korea with me. We recorded the interview right before I left for Seoul, Korea, just a couple days before. But Scott Volk, dear friend, close colleague for many years now, and we'll be leading the tour to Israel together, God willing, February 25th to March 6th of next year. We'll tell you more about that, and we'll talk about Israel. But something else, being in the conference here, not just the encouragement of being around so many people going after God, but talking to other leaders, national leaders in their own countries, international leaders, about what God is doing. I'm hoping I can interview one dear German brother, frontline leader for many, many years. And we were talking about, I said, so what's going on in Germany? And his eyes perked up. He said, harvest, harvest. Talking about all the Muslims coming to faith and what God is doing and saying how he believes it's a time of awakening for Germany. I said, man, we don't hear any of that. We just hear, you know, Europe is post-Christian. And Islam is rising, and we hear the terror reports. He goes, oh, no. He said, this great harvest taking place. And so I'm hoping we'll be able to do an interview while we're still together here in Korea. He's a dear brother. I haven't seen him in many, many years, Walter Heidenreich. But hopefully we'll be able to do that and share with you more of what's happening around the world. But friends, there's a lot of bad news out there. But if we could get reports from around the world of the good news, we'd be staggered. Yeah, the terrorism is horrific, and the wars and the destruction of so many lives in so many ways. It's horrific and it's terrible, but boy, is God moving, and is He raising up an army, and is He turning nations? Yes, He is, and prayer movements rising. And as much as many young people dropping out of church, many young people saying they're not interested in, quote, religion, there are so many who are hungry and thirsty and say, Lord, here's my life. Send me, use me. I want to make a difference. I want my life to count. Whatever you're calling me to do, wherever you're calling me to be, here I am. Send me, use me. There's a whole holy generation being raised up. And I know so many of you godly parents have poured into your kids, and your kids are following in your footsteps, and you're amazed at the quality of their lives. So while there are plenty that are struggling and some have turned their backs on God, God is working. God is moving. Tomorrow, we traveled to the DMZ, to the Demilitarized Zone, and we're going to have, I think, 6 hours of prayer. So it's a day of prayer and fasting, crying out for the unification of North and South Korea. And my friend Walter Heidenreich, as he spoke today, he said, look, he's lived through it. He was born in a divided Germany and a divided Europe, and he's seen much come together. He's seen his own country come together peacefully. So that's the prayer for North Korea. And talking to a missionary to North Korea today, boy, it's a dark place, but God is at work. Right, we'll be right back with Scott Volk on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. God.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I am about to be joined by one of my dearest friends in the world, a great colleague, fellow worker, and fellow Jewish believer in Jesus Yeshua, Scott Volk. You know, the last name Volk is pretty easy, like Volkswagen, but it's been mispronounced in numerous trips and misspelled, and he even has on his door in our building here, he's got it Scott Bjork with an umlaut over the O, for those that know what that means, just because that's how it got misspelled one time. But Scott leads Together for Israel. I've never seen God just back a ministry the way God has backed Scott's ministry. And I want to encourage you with that. We've got some great stories of encouragement for you. And of course, we're going together to Israel again, February 25th to March 6th. So find out about that by going to AskDrBrown.org. And don't think, well, I got months and months to wait. First, it's limited a number of seats we have on the buses or bus for everyone. So a limited number can come. And the sooner you get your deposit in, the better, because things will just be here and gone. We'll be in February before you know it. But Scott, right now, as this interview is airing, I'm in Korea, just speaking earlier in the broadcast from Korea, and now going into this interview that we're recording right before my trip. And you and I, years back, used to travel with me and help serve with me in ministry. So we had some interesting trips to Korea. And any memory in particular that comes to mind about being over there?
I've got a couple. One major memory is both of us were brutally tired upon arriving in Korea when our host, rather than taking us to the hotel, took us to a performance in a local church where he was asking you to do some kind of benediction or short little prayer, and we reluctantly obviously said that we would go. And I remember you and I were sitting maybe five or six seats apart from each other in this hot auditorium. Those were the days where we wore suits, if I'm not mistaken. It was really, really hot in there. We were really, really tired. We didn't understand a word of what was being spoken or sung. And it seemed like days, but it was certainly hours that we were there. I remember doing everything I can to not fall asleep so as to not get our hosts upset at us. And I wanted him to think that we were having a great time. That's one memory that I have of you and I being there together.
Yeah, the air just stagnant in this room. And it was choirs performing. So and they take this very seriously, I mean, very serious music programs. And I remember they'd stand a certain way, and then the choir director would do something, and they'd all of a sudden be in place and turn this way and that way. And it just was endless. And they wanted me halfway through to get up. And I think it was more the translator's idea than the people organizing the choir. This is completely out of place. I'm supposed to get up and preach this red-hot gospel message for 10 minutes. And so I remember, though, we're sitting there, and just try and get each other's attention, doing something to, and I think we were closer in terms of sitting together, but we couldn't talk. It was days before cell phones. You know, couldn't even just look like you're doing something and be occupied somewhere else. And I still remember the night just seemed to be going on endlessly. And God bless them, but we didn't understand anything. It was just, and we were tired, jet lagged, and the room was, it was warm and hot. And anyway, the program is in Korean, so we can't figure anything out. But let's just say there'd been a bunch of choirs. So we're thinking I'm going to speak and we're probably about done. I mean, they said I'm speaking in the middle, but it must be towards the end or something because it's got to be about done. And then every choir did one song and then one choir did two songs. Do you remember pointing down at the program?
Yeah, on the program, I think we couldn't understand Korean, but I saw where one group was actually doing more than one song, and then we realized that there was much more to go than we actually realized in the program.
Yeah, I mean, like it seemed, it's just you had one thing after another. Remember, it's Korean script, so we don't understand any of it. And it was bold, and each bold one apparently was each new choir. And then we saw one that had, each one had like a line under it, but this one had two lines, and Scott like pointed, like, could this, no, this couldn't be. But in fact, It was. And instead of being towards the end of the program, we were towards the beginning. And then after I got up, and I felt totally inappropriate to give this red hot gospel message in the midst of just this choral celebration. And now it's back to the singing. And I said to the brother, I said, you know, it's probably a good idea now that if we go back, you know, if we, maybe it's a good idea because I've spoken, I feel good about that. You know, he goes, no, we stay, we stay. And any other Korean memory?
I've got one other Korean memory. I was going to be speaking because we traveled together. There's probably 500 men. I was going to be speaking to a leadership meeting, and I believe I was speaking on seeing with the eyes of faith. And we were in the car, and we were taking you back to the hotel. And you said, what are you speaking on? I said, I think I'm speaking on seeing through the eyes of faith. And you gave me a chapter, which you probably remember now, but I don't even remember. But anyway, listeners, you got to hear this. Dr. Brown, who I revered, gave me a chapter. He said, look in this chapter. I think, you know, I think it'll really help your message. I got back to my room, bro, and I read that chapter at least three times. I was scouring over it, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me what it was that you were looking at. So I ended up just doing my meeting, and then I remember seeing you after the meeting, and you asked me how it went. I said, bro, it went really, really well, but I have no idea what I was supposed to find in that chapter. Can you help me? So maybe you can remember the end of the story.
I remember well. You're going to be speaking of more pastors and leaders than you ever had in your life. And I thought, okay, here's a great text about looking through natural eyes rather than spiritual eyes. And it's the Gibeonites deceiving Joshua and the leaders by saying, here they were local people that Israel was supposed to exterminate, but they said, well, you know, we came with all of our supplies and look, and they brought moldy bread and worn out sandals. We've been traveling a long time. We've heard, we want to be at peace with you. And Israel was allowed to make peace with distant neighbors. So I thought, because it said, didn't inquire of the mouth of the Lord. They looked at it, they touched, they felt, but they didn't inquire of the mouth of the Lord. So I thought Joshua 9 will be a great chapter. Well, in my jet lag state, I told you, Numbers, I just read through this the other day and thought of it, Numbers 9, which deals with the children of Israel keeping the Passover, but then some were defiled, unclean, so they had to keep it a month later, and that's what goes on here. And then a stranger sojourning among you keeps that. Anyway, there's nothing in the chapter that would have specifically tied it. Maybe the end of the ninth chapter, you could have gotten something out of it. But yeah, he went through it over and over. But you know what's interesting, though? When as we're talking about Israel on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, when I went over there the first time in October of 1990, the very first people I met once I was there, just late at night going to a meal in an obscure part in the outskirts of Seoul, going to this little pizza place that nobody could normally find. And who's in there but two Israelis? Two Israelis. I was shocked. I mean, the only other people in the place, and I realized they weren't Korean. I heard them speaking Hebrew. I said to them in Hebrew, what are you doing here? And they replied in Hebrew, eating pizza. Typical Israeli. And I asked them, I said, are there many Israelis? They said, no, very, very few. In fact, nobody that I ministered with there, the hundreds and hundreds that I spoke with, or thousands, none of them have ever met an Israeli in their country before. They were stunned as I was, because just not a lot of Israelis that are there and so on. So for your average Christian is going to meet one. But immediately the Holy Spirit spoke to me that God had raised up the Korean church not just to be a blessing for Korea and not just for the nations, but also to pray for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I saw the effect of their prayers. The second half of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood was written, carried on the wave of their prayers. And then once the book was written, I hadn't found a publisher yet, but praying with other Koreans who had started a prayer meeting for Israel as a result of my first visit there, as they wept and sobbed for the salvation of the Jewish people, the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said that the stain of blood that's on the church against the Jewish people will only be removed with tears of repentance. You've led tours, and people have come, not just from America, but from other nations, like Singapore. We had six young ladies came from Singapore when we did our tour 2 years ago. What is it about these people from the nations coming to Israel that so impacts them, and maybe they have less baggage than some Americans?
Yeah, I'm blown away by what I would call almost a spiritual innocence from the people that are coming from the nations. As a matter of fact, I was in Singapore shortly after you and I led that tour there, and these, I think there were about six gals. We all went out to eat together, but they were telling me how their life was so radically changed. And they came with this innocent love and desire to be in the land where Jesus walked. I'm blown away by people who are coming. It happens with obviously with people from the United States who have a love for Israel, but it seems like the people from the nations, especially the Far East, are coming with an incredible love for Israel. I can't tell you how many times I've been over there and there have been busloads and busloads of Korean people coming to experience Israel. And even as you're in Korea, you know, as folks are listening to this, I really pray that as you speak, that God's heart for Israel will be just permeated through the nations.
All right, friends, find out what Scott's doing togetherforisrael.org and to sign up for our trip, the trip of a lifetime, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, February 25th, March 6th, Israel, coming your way. No, you'll be coming to Israel. Israel is waiting for you. We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is a specially recorded broadcast with my friend and colleague, Scott Volk. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos, a church all too often in compromise, and a church that historically has gotten things wrong all too often on Israel. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and Scott and I both want to invite you to join us for our second ever Israel tour. He's done probably several dozen now, but it's the second one that we'll be leading together February 25th to March 6th. For more information, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. In a moment, I want to tell you why it is such a special tour, a unique tour in many, many ways. But here's something interesting I want you to hear. If you've never heard Scott's story, I want to take a minute for you to hear this again. Scott, You're raised in a Jewish believing home, first a Jewish non-believing home. Your dad's successful in the stock market and things like that. Your mom and dad have supernatural encounters with the Lord, born again. So now you know, okay, we're Jews, we believe in Jesus. But you did not like to identify as Jewish. I didn't realize it when I hear you say, my parents are Jewish, but you didn't like to say, I am Jewish. Why was that?
Well, I felt when I was younger that when people would identify themselves that way, it came across maybe as arrogant or as there was more of a calling on their life as a Jewish person. So I would typically say I was born in a Jewish home or my parents were born Jews. There was, I guess, it certainly wasn't anti-Semitic, but it was just I called myself shamelessly a Christian, and the reason that the Jewish part wasn't part of me is because I guess I saw so much of what I would call extreme Jewish love and affectation, maybe from non-Jewish people, linking themselves in Gentiles wearing yarmulkes and prayer shawls and blowing shofars and saying Yeshua instead of Jesus and observing the Sabbath. But to me, a lot of that seemed almost extra. It seemed soulish, and it actually turned me off. So much so that I raised my kids with Christmas and Easter. I would remember painting Easter eggs with my kids at the kitchen table on the day before Easter with my fully saved Arab wife, thinking there's something slightly wrong here. But it was never a burden of mine. I was a pastor. I was a churchgoer. I loved church. I loved Easter and Christmas. The feasts meant absolutely nothing to me. And I felt like I was a good Christian guy who happened to be born in a Jewish home.
Friends, it's important you hear this because otherwise you think, well, that's just because he's Jewish or that's just because Mike Brown's Jewish. No, actually, these are things that God wrote in our heart. But what's most fascinating to me, though, is somehow you start leading tours to Israel. This becomes part of your life. You're enjoying doing it, and yet you don't have a burden. The light hasn't gone on yet. So how is it that you're leading tourists to Israel, and yet you don't have the burden?
It's a great question. I had a friend who was working in a tour company in Israel, and I just felt, I think it was 2005, the first year, I thought, I'm going to take a student trip to Israel, grab some students from our school at Fire School of Ministry, and we went. My goal in going was to see the land and also to serve. But I'm telling you, bro, I did not see Israel any differently than I saw Korea when we were there or Africa. To me, it was a piece of real estate in the Middle East. And we were going, and it also happened to be the place where Jesus spent his life. Outside of that, there was no special affection to Israel whatsoever.
And the people going, were they getting impacted and you weren't getting impacted?
Well, they were getting impacted. The way I viewed it was, cool, Jesus walked here. I mean, you and I had the privilege of being in Buckingham Palace before. And I thought to myself, cool, King Henry walked on these halls. Well, I guess there was a King Henry. Wasn't there a King Henry? King anybody, prince somebody, queen somebody. So to me, it was almost the same thing. I'm walking where Jesus walked. But I'm telling you, there was no correlation to any biblical love or paradigm in my heart. Nothing.
By the way, remember King Henry VIII, so there's probably more than one King Henry. And of course, killed his wives. That was to say that he married them and then he axed them. But I don't know how long Buckingham Palace was there. I mean, we met with Prince Andrew, so I don't know if King Henry walked those same halls. I'm not a British historian, sorry to say. But you get the point, friends, that Scott is making. Here he is leading tourists to Israel, thinking, yeah, it's a good thing to do. Jesus walked there, still not getting it, still not having the burden. And then the light went on. Something happened. And we've just got 3 minutes before the break, so we'll have to get the short version of this. And I want to, again, extend an invitation to the two of us, inviting you to join us on our tour next year. But how did the light go on? What happened?
Yeah, a couple of things happened. Number one, I started a nonprofit with the purpose of giving funds to the poor and needy in Israel, both Arab and Jew. On my first trip, I walked into an underprivileged children's center. I was gripped with the scripture that said, "In as much as you've done it to the least of these brothers of mine, you've done it to me." And I knew that God was calling me to be a conduit of funds to the poor and needy in Israel, both Arab and Jew. Amazingly, that was without any burden for Israel whatsoever. After 5 years of giving, and our organization thankfully has given hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it was in 2010, I was flying home from Israel, and I felt as if God was sitting in the seat next to me saying, "You're a Jew, and I've called you to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." In a way, I almost felt like I was a Jewish Cornelius, a man who gave without even knowing the true God. And God revealed himself to Cornelius, Acts 10. It's one of my favorite chapters. Here I was giving without even a burden for Israel, and God in his sovereignty and grace opened my eyes. I feel, even as a result of my giving, as I was giving, it says in Acts 10 that Cornelius's prayers and giving ascended as a sweet fragrance to the Lord. I believe that God saw my heart and gave me his revelation of his people. And bro, I came back. I remember sitting and telling you what happened. I've never been the same. I would find myself kneeling by my bed, innocently opening up and reading Jeremiah 31 and finding myself crying uncontrollably with the revelation of how much God loved Israel and how much he loved the people of the land.
And friends, there's something that'll happen to you on the trip to Israel, as God did something in Scott, and by the way, sealed it with a sign, namely an unexpected child. Their youngest child was, what, 14 years old when they found out they were having another. They had four kids, the youngest 14, so 14 years had gone by, and then suddenly here comes Olivia. It was when something new was birthed in their hearts, and that something new was this special heart for Israel. So when you join us, you'll meet with Jewish believers in the land. Many tourists, you'll go there and never connect with the living stones in the land, meet with Arab believers. You'll get to sit in on some of my live radio shows. We'll have meals together. You'll get to, here, just think of how cool it'll be to be on Mount Carmel when I'm talking about Elijah calling down fire from heaven. And Scott with you every step of the way, one of the top tour guides in Israel. It's an amazing time, an amazing package, and it's greatly priced as well. So get your deposit in. You'll never be the same. The trip of a lifetime. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. And keep praying for me here in Seoul, Korea, as we minister.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I am combining broadcasts where I'm broadcasting from Korea together with interviews that I have done with colleagues recorded right before leaving for Korea. So we're up to date on what's happening in the news. I'm speaking to you from these special meetings in Korea, sharing what's happening so that you can keep praying as we're having this amazing time with young people and with key leaders in the nation. I'm scheduled to speak at two key churches on Sunday before heading back home on Monday. So please do keep us in prayer. But I'm sitting here now with my friend and colleague, Scott Volk. And many of you have heard Scott before. He's co-hosted for me. He leads TogetherForIsrael.org. And I don't want to embarrass Scott. He's known as everybody's best friend. He's one of the nicest guys you'll meet. His whole family is just like that. And they have an incredible spirit of hospitality. And as long as I've known Scott, he's always been a giver. And I've never known him to have a big salary. In fact, I've often known him to be in tight spots with salary and ministry and things they were doing for the family. But they've always had so that they can give and bless others. And I've been quite a few times at gathering, maybe it's a big meal, a bunch of missionaries together, and we're all sitting at a restaurant having a meal together, some of our grads from our school, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, my tab is this amount, and next thing you find out, Scott's paid the whole ticket for everybody, and it's almost impossible to beat him to the punch to get this done. You think you've made arrangements with the server, only to find out that he got there 2 minutes before and told the person, hey, no matter what they say, I'm paying. But Scott, now that you've launched Together for Israel, I've never seen anyone have so much favor on a ministry and funds coming in. What is it spiritually about giving? Obviously, you give because you love God and you love people, but you also know there's a spiritual principle. Talk to our listeners about that.
I definitely believe there's a spiritual principle. I don't know Greek. You obviously know it much better than I. But that scripture that says, ask and it shall be given to you, I believe it really says, ask and keep on asking, correct?
Yeah.
So ask and it shall be given to you. Give and it shall be given unto you. Give and keep on giving. I really believe that there's a principle in the word that when we give, we receive. Our motivation for giving should never, ever be, I'm giving so that I get something back. You know, for people who say, you know, I tried that tithing thing and it didn't work, the whole fact that they're saying it didn't work tells me that they're not giving out of the proper heart.
Yeah, well, I tell people, did God get your 10%? Then it worked. Okay, but so I'm not saying, okay, I'm giving to this ministry, I'm giving to Israel because it's a good investment. I'm going to give because I'm going to get more. You give to give, but what happens when you do that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I believe that the Lord looks and in return, he blesses you. The Bible says, cast your bread on the water. It will come back to you after many days. I've lived, as you said, many, many times without even a paycheck. And bro, I can't tell you, I believe that we're living right now in a season of supernatural provision. It's almost as if God stored up our hearts to give, even when we were unable to give, and ends up blessing. Do I have time to tell you a quick story of what just happened to me in Salt Lake City?
I tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We've got just a few seconds before the break. We come back. I want to encourage your heart, friends. I've watched Scott live, his whole family. I've watched the way they've lived, the sacrificial, joyful giving. I remember speaking at a congregation and instead of receiving an offering for our ministry like they were supposed to do, they gave us a small gift. And I remember leaving it. Scott said it was their loss. And he really meant it. It was their loss because they didn't get to give. And by the way, I'm not setting you up with a ploy at the end of this telling you why you should write out the biggest check you can towards our ministry. Sure, we need funds and we're praying in funds all the time. I just felt because I've watched Scott in operation, sowing, sowing, sowing all these years. Now he's reaping, and he's reaping so he can give more. We'll talk about that when we come back right here on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with Michael Brown. I'm together with Scott Volk as we're talking about how God has moved supernaturally in his ministry Together for Israel. You can find out about that by going to togetherforisrael.org. He's seen supernatural favor, but the ministry exists to give, to help Jewish believers and Arab believers in need in the land. So the more he gets, the more he gives. And that's his thrill with how much he gets to give. So his heart has remained the same, that yes, give, and it's given back to you. God rewards generosity. Those who sow liberally reap liberally. But when you sow out of the right heart, it produces the right results. And I want to talk about specifically how God has blessed Together for Israel. But first, there was something happened recently you wanted to share. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a crazy but simple thing. I was returning my car in Salt Lake City this weekend. And as you know, when you return a car, if you don't buy the fuel option, you need to fill the car up. So I stopped at a gas station about 3 miles from the airport, and I put the gas in the car until it clicked. And I felt like God asked me if I was willing to top it off. And I know that sounds absolutely crazy and that nobody was going to see me, but I really felt like, could I give in a stupid generous way? Could I just overly give? And I'm telling you, it really didn't cost me that much. I think it was maybe $1.50 that I put in, maybe one more gallon. I literally topped it off. When I got back to the Hertz rental place and returned my car, the guy gets in the car and turns the key on and says, did you put gas in it? I said, yeah, I put gas in it. And he saw that the meter was well above the full mark. And he looks at me and he goes, nobody ever tops it off like that. To me, I feel like the Lord looks for us not just to give our 10% in the offering plate or a 15% tip. Sometimes I'll see people get their calculators out to figure out exactly what 15% of $10.46 is so that they can give it to the waiter. I say, if we look for ways to give in a generous way, because that's how God is with us, he is going to bless us. And I definitely think it pertains to how we give to Israel.
All right, so you birthed this ministry Together for Israel. The whole goal is to support believers in Israel, to help the needy, and there are many, and even Jewish non-believers, to help in different ways that you can. You lead tours, that's part of what you do, but it's not primarily to lead tours, it's primarily to bless Israel. So glory in the Lord, boast in the Lord. What have you seen happen so far? And how much backing did you have to get started?
Okay, I will boast in the Lord because and I'm not even being falsely humble. I can't take any credit for this. I'm not smart enough. In 2012 was the year that I devoted myself full-time to Together for Israel. We started this nonprofit in 2005. And as we started it, we were distributing maybe hundreds of dollars a year. 2012 was a breakthrough year. It was the year that I launched full-time into Together for Israel. That year, we gave $18,000 to the poor and needy in Israel, both Arab and Jew. And I thought, Lord, can we ever do this again? That was 2012. 2013, we gave $36,000. 2014, we gave $80,000. 2015, we gave over $110,000. Actually, it's a lot more than that, but that's what we gave specifically to people. Other people gave extra money that we were able to give as well. So, bro, here I am, somebody who's hardly made what the world would consider a large amount of money, and we're giving hundreds of thousands of dollars now a year to Israel. And the more we give, the more we're able to give, because I'm finding that more money's coming in. I'm not opposed to putting out a newsletter. I just haven't gotten all my ducks in a row to do that yet. I'm not opposed to raising support. I'm not a great fundraiser, and I don't do those things well. But yet, I'm getting phone calls from people saying, hey, the Lord put your ministry on our heart. We want to give a sizable gift. One of my favorite gifts that we gave was just recently, I received a phone call from a woman in Israel who oversees a ministry for children with special needs. Now, very, very few people know about this ministry. She started it because she herself has a son, a special needs son who's over 20 years old now. And there was nothing for believing families in Israel for this. They had their first conference in 2014. We were able to give a couple thousand dollars. And I got an email from her. She said, "Dear Scott, I know you're so busy, but if there's any way you can pray about helping us this year, our budget's $10,000 and we've been able to raise $2,000. And I'm telling you, bro, this isn't because I'm a wealthy man. Thankfully, we had enough money in our account for me to be able to say, don't worry about raising another penny. The $8,000 is in the mail for you. And I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, I know that when God sees us blessing Israel, he ends up blessing us. And it's not even like it's this, it's more than just scientific. It's supernaturally scientific. For me, all I've been doing was being obedient to give. And all I can tell you is we are receiving far more than we can give. It's incredible.
You know, we did an event together, and it was helping to fund ministry work that I'm doing, helping to fund the radio broadcast and our outreach to the Jewish people and things like that. And there was a miscommunication in terms of who was receiving the offering at the end of the night, and it fell on you. And you got up and basically said, hey, just pray, give whatever the Lord wants you to give. It was the world's most low-key possible offering after a night that was designed to edify and be fundraising. So you are anything but Mr. Fundraiser. You talk about people not being offended, a meeting you'd give, you know, it'd be quite the opposite. And yet you've had this supernatural generosity come your way. You called me a few months back. You were in a state of shock. You ministered it to a small group of people, and yet, tell us, this is what happened.
Yeah, this is absolutely incredible. For those who only minister in large places, this should really, really encourage you. I got invited to speak at a church of approximately 100 people. I believe their average monthly tithes and offerings were $12,000 a month. About $150,000 a year comes in tithes and offerings. And the pastor of that church took me out to lunch and said, Scott, will you come and minister on Israel in our church? We want to receive an offering for Israel. And I said, great, no problem. I'll go anywhere. I don't charge to go. I don't need anything. So I went to this church. I spoke on a Sunday and then did a home meeting on Tuesday night. I spoke on blessing Israel on Sunday. The pastor gets up and says, this is the offering that I've been telling you about for 2 months now. I want you guys to give. We're going to bless the nation of Israel, and we're going to bless the God of Israel. And they gave. On Tuesday night, I was at the house for the home meeting. And after I spoke, the pastor, there was probably 50 people in this house, jam-packed. The pastor said, we're going to present Scott with this offering, and I'm calling it a miracle offering. And Scott, when you see this offering, you'll know why it's a miracle. Let me tell you, Mike, to me, a miracle in that crowd would have been $5,000. And when I opened the check, it was a check for $40,000. I couldn't hold back the tears. It was incredible. I stood up. They wanted to pray for me. And when the pastor prayed for me, he said, look, if anybody didn't give on Sunday, we're putting a basket on this table. Feel free to give now. And I'm thinking, what in the world? Give again? They pray for me. When they're done praying, there's a basket with a white envelope that says Israel on it. The pastor takes it away, calls me into the bedroom and says, Scott, you've got to see this. Laid out on the bed was $20,000 cash. So I walked away from this church of 100 people with $60,000 to give to the poor and needy in Israel. And this is what the Lord said. I thought a miracle was going to be $5,000. And God said, take the lid off. If you can think about how big I want to bless you or how much I want to do for you, it's too small. No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind can conceive what God has prepared. And I really believe that we're walking in a season where God wants to supernaturally give beyond what you could even ask or think so that he can be glorified in the nations.
So friends, we're talking about what one missionary of many, many years, Wayne Myers, refers to as live to give. Not give to get, but live to give. And take the lid off of your thinking. Now look, many of you, you're just struggling to get by day, and life has been tough, and you've had some real hardship, and you're thinking, man, this just sounds wild. Remember, I'm not telling you, sow a seed into this ministry now, and you'll get a special return. That's not why I had Scott talk about this. I had Scott talk about this because, one, I wanted to encourage your own heart to generosity wherever you're serving and giving, whatever God's having you do, and two, because I wanted you to see that often something special does happen when people say, hey, we want to stand with the people of Israel. Remember, Paul wrote in Romans 15 to the believers there that if you've benefited from them spiritually, then you should help them in the natural. And he was talking about poor believers in Jerusalem. So these are important things, and God is doing things that are supernatural. So I encourage you to cultivate a spirit of generosity in your heart. There is carnal prosperity preaching that I utterly reject and denounce and have done for decades. There is preaching on a spirit of generosity that is so freeing and is so biblical and is so wonderful. And Scott is living proof towards it. And to find out what he's doing, to get behind the ministry, go to togetherforisrael.org and pray with Scott. There's some important TV broadcasting that he and his team are developing that could take things to a whole new level of standing with the Jewish people in Israel. So we've got more to come. We'll be right back on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. Pray for me in Korean.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, okay, as you hear my voice, I am in Korea and just coming to the end of this very, very special conference, a resurgence conference to really call the young people in Korea into a fresh encounter with God. And to start to rise up in their generation. Then I've got messages to preach on right through Sunday morning, afternoon, before flying back on Monday. So I've been broadcasting from Korea and keeping up with the news and sharing my heart, as well as incorporating these interviews that I recorded right before Korea. So you're hearing my voice in Korea. I'm not sitting in Korea as I record, but pray for me in Korea, because that's where I'll be as you're listening to this live on the radio, sitting here with my friend and colleague of many, many years, Scott Volk. And together we'll be leading the tour to Israel next year. If you haven't checked out the website yet, go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. We really want to see you there in Israel. It will be the trip of a lifetime. So, Scott, you run into people objecting to, quote, Christian Zionism, some even in very, very strong and ugly terms, some as if you're not even a believer, if you hold to these things. What would you say are the principal objections, either theologically or politically, that you run into? You've asked me to write a book, and you're helping compile things on, like I have my 5-volume series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. This would be a 1-volume, hopefully 1-volume, on answering Christian objections to Israel. So you've been putting those together, and that is something that I hope to get to as soon as I finish some other projects. But what are the biggest things, either theologically or politically? We'll tackle a few of them that you run into there.
Great. And I'd love to ask you to answer these. I know you're the interviewer here. But one thing that I like to say to people is that if you look at Israel biblically, if you look at Israel politically, you'll end up hating either Arabs or Jews or both. If you look at Israel biblically, you'll end up loving both Arabs and Jews. I think the thing that I run into that is most disturbing to me is that when people take a political view and interpret the Bible through their political lens, there seems to be an animosity either towards the Arabs or towards the Jews. So I think obviously we have to come at this biblically. One of the biggest objections that I get is that Israel does not treat the Palestinians fairly, that Israel is an apartheid state, that the Palestinians don't have a chance in the world to make it there because of the pressure that Israel puts on them as a result of building the fence, and part of it is a wall, security fence, that many, many Palestinians are suffering. And the biggest objection that I get is that Israel isn't really caring for those people and not owning up to the fact that Palestinians are suffering as a result of the wall being there.
Last week, I actually interacted with the view that it's an apartheid wall. We played some clips that make that very claim, and we interacted with it. Caleb Myers, a Jewish believing friend who's an attorney in Israel, he's got a great video where he drives along and just kind of takes you and shows you the truth about the security barrier there, which is 97% fence and 3% wall. And as I said last week, where it's a wall that's to keep snipers out, where it's a fence that's just keep murderers out in general. And it's worked tremendously, tremendously well. But to answer that question, I'm sure that there are Israelis that mistreat Palestinians. I'm sure that there are Israeli soldiers who have gone too far. I'm sure that in some circles there's been a dehumanizing. But overwhelmingly, the issue is simply this. If Palestinian leaders will stop inciting hatred for Israel and stop trying to murder Jewish men, women, and children, you won't need a wall, you won't need a fence, and the quality of life of the Palestinians, the so-called West Bank and Gaza, will grow exponentially. We know before Israel controlled Gaza and before Israel controlled so-called West Bank, which is biblical Judea and Samaria, before it controlled those, when they were under Arab control, say Gaza under Egypt or so-called West Bank under Jordan, there was no liberation, there was no freeing, there was no raising of lifestyle for the Palestinians. They in many ways remain outcasts and were not absorbed into the Arab world. In fact, the larger Arab world put out a resolution, Arab League in the 50s, saying that we will not incorporate the Palestinian refugees into our state. So this is going to make Israel look bad and be Israel's problem. So in short, if they stopped inciting terrorism, if they cultivated friendly relations and said, let us live in harmony and peace, then the quality of life would go up dramatically. And this is not rocket science. I hate to be redundant because I've said this so many times, but the 200,000 Arabs, Palestinians, if you like, who stayed in Israel proper in 1948 with the establishment of the new state, who were not among the 600,000 or 700,000 who fled during the war there, they have become from 200,000 to 1.5 million and have privileges side by side with Israel. They don't have to fight in the army, but they serve in every other capacity from Supreme Court to Knesset, the Israeli parliament. So if the Palestinian leadership did not want to wipe out the Jewish people, everybody could live in harmony. It doesn't mean that we ignore injustice if we see it, but it means we put it in a larger context. Well, we've only got a couple minutes. Just give me one more objection you run into a lot.
One objection that I run into a lot is the scripture that points to us believers, Jew and Gentile alike, as a chosen generation. Now, you are a chosen generation. You are the royal priesthood, a peculiar people that God has now taken and put on you. In the scriptures, obviously that was meant for Israel. Now it's the nations coming in that are called a chosen people, a royal priesthood and a holy nation. If that's the case now, why are the Jewish people any more special than the Chinese people or the Mongolian people? Obviously, God would that none would perish, but now it's the world that's God's focus, not necessarily Israel or the Jewish people.
Yeah, it's both and. In other words, God made promises to a people. He's going to keep his promises. He keeps his word. He made promises to Israel. He said he would give them the land as a possession throughout the generations. Then under the Sinai covenant, if they sinned, he'd scatter them. Then in his mercy, he'd regather them. He's done it because he keeps his word and because the people need a place to live. And it glorifies God in front of the whole world that he preserved Israel and brought Israel back, brought the Jewish people back. Many scholars believe that 1 Peter was written to Jewish believers. Mm-hmm. So the chosen generation and royal priesthood could have been spoken to Jewish believers. But let's say it applies. Let's say we accept it applies to all believers. Yes, Jews and Gentiles in Jesus are equally sons and daughters of God, are equally branches of the vine, are equally parts of the body, are equally priests to God, are equally called by God. One body, one family, no caste system, no class system. We are one in Jesus the Messiah. It doesn't mean, though, that God still doesn't keep the promises that he gave to Israel, especially pertaining to Israel and the land. And Jesus won't return until a Jewish Jerusalem welcomes him back. Therefore, there has to be a Jewish Jerusalem. So these things have to come to pass. One family, one people, equally loved by God. And yet, the promises to the Jews remain. And by the way, the Jewish people are also called Jacob. Is the church the new Jacob? No. No one even thinks like that. All right. Friends, go to togetherforisrael.org. Visit Scott's website. Get involved with Standing with the Lost Sheep of the House of Israel. And join Scott and me February 25th to March 6th of next year. All those details at the AskDrBrown.org website. My bottom line today, can you trust a God who makes promises and breaks them? No. The good news is he makes promises and keeps them.